Earlier this month, the NCAA did a weird thing. It announced an investigation that was ongoing. That wasn't finished, they didn't have results yet, but they just wanted to go public about it. And they said that players at six different schools, including Arizona State, Eastern Michigan, Temple, and a few others, were being investigated for sports gambling. That they were part of the sports gambling. It was kind of unprecedented a little bit. But it speaks to this particular time in sports, where sports gambling is top of mind all the time, no matter who you are. This investigation, based on my reporting and others, also is connected to a sports gambling scheme that went all the way up to the NBA, where Jontay Porter, former Toronto Raptors center, has already been banned by the league and pled guilty to a federal charge of conspiracy for what is essentially manipulating his performance so that a few of his friends could win some prop bets on him. And if that doesn't explain where we are in professional sports and college sports right now, I don't know what does. But on this episode of Business Decision, I want to get into how sports gambling has taken over sports. I'm Mike Vorkunov. I'm a reporter with The Athletic. But on my show, I want to talk about the biggest thing that nobody really seems to be talking about. And today, I have Jared Diamond, a reporter for The Wall Street Journal, on as a guest. Jared is a friend. We used to cover the Mets together. Now we're out in the reporting streets figuring out the next gambling scandal. Jared has broken a few of these. He broke that baseball had banned the player already for gambling. He broke that the Eastern District of New York was investigating Miami Heat guard Terry Rozier as part of its sports gambling investigation. And he's been on top of the various other sports gambling scandals that have popped up over the last 5 years or so since sports gambling has become legal. Jared, thank you for joining me.
I'm so glad to be talking about my favorite subject, how gambling is destroying sports.
Whoa, talk about burying the lead. We're going to build up to it. Yes. So we want to talk about how sports gambling has taken over sports. And there's not a lot been said about it, right? For a number of reasons. I don't know if you know this. I don't know how much sports you watch, Jared. But the sports gambling companies, the sports books, happen to be in business with, I would generally say, all of pro sports, right? We see the ads during games. We see the sponsorships at arenas. We see sometimes the sports books literally next to the arena, depending what city you're on. You know, this is everywhere. It is pervasive. I live in New Jersey. I cannot drive more than a mile without seeing an ad for gambling somewhere in the city that I live. That's how pervasive it is. I want to take the light rail. I see an ad for FanDuel. That's how it's always in my face.
It is everywhere. It is completely ubiquitous in our culture. And if you pay even a modicum of attention to sports, you have been inundated with gambling advertisements and gambling content, in air quotes, incessantly. You mentioned where these sports books are located. The first one of these that I covered, that I wrote about in detail, involved the Alabama baseball coach, now former Alabama baseball coach, who had essentially divulged inside information to a gambler before that information was publicly available, so that gambler could essentially bet against Alabama. And those bets that guy placed were placed at a sportsbook inside Cincinnati's Great American Ballpark, where the Reds play, not next to the stadium, in the stadium. And that's when I realized, all right, we've officially crossed some sort of event horizon. If you could literally go bet on sports in the venue where you watch sports, the fact that we've gone from gambling being illegal and being viewed by every professional sports league in America as the biggest threat they could possibly face to, we're going to have a sports book in our building. That could happen this short of a time. I think that is just shows you where we are as a sports culture right now.
Yeah, and I want to take a step back for a minute. Part of what I hope to do with Business Decision is to take these issues that we as sports reporters, sports nerds, sports business wonks, think about a lot, but most people don't, right? Because you have lives, you have families, you have interests. There's a lot of Marvel movies that you need to catch up on. And I want to bring that to a general audience. And so let me take a step back and just do a quick TLDR. There was a once upon a time where it was really, really hard to gamble, right? Mostly it was, for most people, a trip to Las Vegas. Some people did the off, you know, the offshore books, but most people is, let's go to Las Vegas, let's lose a lot of money betting on sports, let's never tell any of our partners about it, and joke with our friends just how much we lost in that time period, right? That was most people's experience with sports gambling. In 2018, the Supreme Court came down with a ruling that undid a law that had blocked gambling to essentially four states. Since then, sports gambling has been available in the majority of states, right? Like, we now have nearly 40 states in which sports gambling and online sports gambling are legal, not including Washington, D.C., where it is also legal and not a state. So that's how pervasive it has become in less than a decade. You know, it went from something where the sports leagues shun gambling, where they did not want to be associated with it, where Tony Romo was not allowed to do some kind of like fantasy sports event while he was still the Cowboys quarterback, to now being in business with all of these sports books and various entities that can pay them money for it, right? That's how quickly things have changed, you know? And I want to take that step back to let everyone know that this is why we are where we are right now. You know, everyone remembers the Shoeless Joe Jackson Chicago Black Sox scandal.
Sure.
Which was about 100 years ago.
That
we were alive. We were watching it on Netflix back then with the World Series. But that was pretty much the status quo, right? That was pretty much everyone's big memory and kind of like how they were taught about how bad sports gambling is and why the leagues were against it. And now we're in a completely different place. And I think it was interesting to take a step back to explain how we have gotten to this point today, where it's impossible to not see sports gambling ads during sporting events where they are marketers for the teams and the leagues and the NBA and the NFL and baseball all have official sports gambling partners and share data with them and profit off of those partnerships.
And I think it's interesting to know just how quickly leagues sort of changed their official stance on sports gambling when it became legal. You know, really up until the Supreme Court ruling, many professional sports leagues, most of them, really right up into the last possible second, were still publicly, vehemently against sports gambling, continuing to sort of hold on to their stance that they had held for a century, really ever since 1919, that said sports gambling is this big threat. And then the moment it becomes legal, I mean, immediately after the Supreme Court says, all right, free-for-all in sports gambling, and state after state quickly starts passing their own legal sports gambling laws, those leagues immediately forgot everything they had stood for 100 years and said, you know what? Gambling is great. Let's get on board. They had dollar signs in their eyes the moment the opportunity presented itself. And it really is shocking. It's so tonally dissonant to hear these leagues overnight go from sports gambling will be the death of us to sports gambling is our economic future. And it really did happen that quickly.
Yeah. And I just want to say, in case you're listening to this so far and you're watching this so far and you think, wow, look at these two millennials yelling at clouds about how bad sports gambling is. That's not the intent or the purpose of this episode. It's really just to talk about where we have come and how far along we are in this process. And I want to read a quote to you that Gary Bettman said at a boardroom conference earlier in September. He was asked about sports gambling, and he had kind of this matter-of-fact answer to it. And I kind of appreciate it in some ways because I think the way he talked about it was pretty telling. He said, whether or not I think it was a good thing or a bad thing, it's the fact of life. And then the questioner asked him, it seems like you don't love it, though. Well, I think everything in moderation. And I think if gambling becomes more important than the games themselves, then something's wrong. And I worry about the impact on young people and responsible betting. And I think that tells me a lot, which is that the leagues, the teams need sports gambling in some sort of way. They need the dollars that it drives. And again, I also want to add, media organizations, a lot of them are increasingly reliant on some of these marketing dollars that these sportsbooks use, right, to get in front of people. But there's not much that can be done about it. Whether you like it or not, it's become too important a part of the sports economy. Jared, I want to talk to you because baseball has been most recently hit with it, right? We saw two Cleveland Guardian pitchers suspended in the middle of the summer, one apparently on the trade block, and that kind of threw the whole sport into a loop. And I was wondering if you could just kind of like walk me through that entire episode. What was alleged about those pitchers and what happened, and how, to me, that kind of explains how sports gambling has its tentacles and everything. And it's not just about the fans or the leagues, and how the players can be implicated in this as well.
The situation with the two Guardians pitchers, Luis Ortiz and Emmanuel Clase, was a real eye-opening experience for many sports fans, not for seasoned gamblers, people have been betting on FanDuel regularly for years. They all knew everything I'm about to tell you. But for the average American, the average sports fan, it was quite illuminating because it revealed what modern sports gambling really is. There's, I think, still this perception held by some that sports gambling means you go and you bet on the winner of the game. You bet on whether Team X is going to cover the spread or not, because that's what largely sports gambling was in Las Vegas sportsbooks for most of history, essentially. But what happened with these Guardians pitchers is something much more nefarious. Luis Ortiz pitched for Cleveland, one of their starters in their rotation, has essentially been accused of manipulating individual pitches so that people could make money on them. In other words, people had the opportunity to bet that an individual pitch thrown by Ortiz would be a ball or a strike. And Ortiz, knowing this, and in cahoots with, to this point, still unknown conspirators, intentionally threw balls so that people could bet on those pitches and make money. And then his teammate, Emmanuel Clase, has also been roped into the investigation as well. And it's not exactly clear yet what Clase's role in it is, but we'll find out probably sometime this winter when MLB concludes its investigation, which will very likely result in both players being banned for life. But what was so crazy about all this, and why I think it rattled people, because they had them go, wait, you could bet on the outcome of an individual pitch on the internet? And like, yeah, you can. And if you're going, that seems like a problem. Yeah, you're right. It is kind of crazy that you were able to go on the internet and bet that an individual pitch was going to be a ball or a strike, because it is such an easy thing for a player to manipulate. It's called spot fixing, and it's something that has been pervasive in European sports and other global sport that's now made its way to the United States. And what essentially it means is it's an athlete not throwing a game, but manipulating the outcome of an individual event within the game that might not determine the outcome, but is still something you could bet on. So a very classic example of this would be people betting on the outcome of individual serves in tennis. Will serve X be a fault or not? All a player has to do is intentionally fault on that serve, and no one's the wiser because a reasonably large percentage of first serves in tennis are faults anyway. So who's going to think anything of it? Same with Luis Ortiz. A large percentage of Luis Ortiz's pitches are balls anyway. So who's going to suspect when he spikes a slider in the dirt that he did that on purpose? But that is now the allegation against him when a unusual amount of money came in on Ortiz's pitch being a ball. So that's what's happened. And spot fixing is a huge threat. And I think it speaks to this larger issue of where we are in sports gambling, where we associate sports gambling scandals with people throwing games, right, with losing on purpose. That's what happened allegedly in 1919 with the White Sox. But virtually none of the gambling scandals that have come to light in American sports in the last couple of years have involved a team or a player intentionally throwing a game, but rather manipulating the performance in other ways. You know, fewer manipulating their rebounds and points for prop bets, like in the case of Jonte Porter, individual pitches in the case of Luis Ortiz, or in the case of these college basketball teams, allegedly, manipulating their performance solely in the first half so that there was a, you know, that under a certain amount of points were scored in the first half and nothing to do with the outcome of the game. These are the threats that now these leagues face, not just games being thrown, but individual pitches, halves, quarters, one player's rebounds or assists, because all of these markets are available and not just available in some smoky sports book on the strip, but right here in the, with, you know, the palm of your hand, you could go place bets on these things with three taps of your phone within a matter of seconds.
Yeah, and that world is getting bigger. You now see prediction markets like Kalshi pop up that are becoming more easily accessible to, you know, interested bettors. Obviously, the opportunity is growing with more states. It seems like every month or so, there's another state that comes online that is now able to take mobile sports gambling bets. And I thought that the Major League Baseball thing was, for the reason you described, an interesting window into all of how this works, right? Not only in who's able to participate in some of these sports gambling scandals, but also how it works. You know, in the NBA, which is what I cover usually, Jonte Porter was banned for manipulating his performance, for making sure that the people who bet on him won their prop bets on the over-unders on his points, his rebounds, his assists. He, you know, claimed an illness to get out of one game early. He claimed an injury to get out of another game early. And these are the ways that seem very small, because how many of you really bet on Jonte Porter? How many of you had even heard of Jonte Porter? But over a longer period of time, and if it happens frequently enough, really eat away at the integrity of professional sports, right? That's what kind of makes sports what it is the unpredictable competition of it, the unpredictable results of it. And sports gambling, when used illegally by sports gamblers, and if it includes sports athletes in on the scheme, really eradicates that pretty quickly.
Here's what people need to understand. Professional sports and college sports, which are basically professional sports these days, are giant businesses that generate, you know, upward of $10 billion a year in revenue every year. This is not some rinky-dink organization like, you know, sports were in the 1940s. This is giant business. And those giant businesses are entirely contingent. On the very fragile understanding that what is happening on the field and court is genuine competition. Without that belief, wholehearted, full-throated belief by fans, the business collapses. It completely crumbles. There's absolutely nothing to sell if people doubt that what they are watching on the field is genuine. And here we are in 2025, and I would argue that we are very rapidly approaching a place where fans do doubt, to some extent, what they see on the field. And all you need to do to prove that theory is go on social media on any NFL Sunday. You will see a player will fumble a ball, or will drop what looked like a routine pass, or a quarterback will overthrow a wide open receiver. And the internet will light up with people tweeting, he's got to be investigated. That guy must have had money on the game. And they're joking, kind of. They're joking, but they're not. It's a joke that comes from a place of, well, wait a minute. Was that genuine? And here's the thing. It doesn't matter if anything untoward is actually happening. What matters is that there is doubt. All it takes is the thought to creep into a football fan's head to say, wait a second, did he fumble that ball on purpose? Just having that thought cripples the entire sports landscape. And we're rapidly, I believe, heading toward that. And I think the leagues, to some extent, know this. And they're all sort of sitting there hoping that whatever the big one is, the big scandal that blows everything open, doesn't happen to them. Because there have been a lot of scandals already in sports. Baseball's already banned a player for life. The NBA's banned a player for life. Those were fringe players that no one really knew. Baseball might ban two more players this offseason, one of whom, in the case of Class A, is a multi-time All-Star, certainly a known entity, but not necessarily a superstar. And the leagues are saying
fired an umpire for being gambling adjacent as well.
Correct. Fired an umpire for gambling. Who knows what happened to some of these other NBA players, as Terry Rozier or Malik Beasley, who's been implicated. Does anything come of that? We do not know. But every league is sort of hoping that they could toe this line of, we're going to protect the integrity of our sports while also encouraging fans to gamble. Fans, you should be gambling. These people over here, don't worry, they're not going to be gambling. And here's the thing. We all want to believe that this situation with Luis Ortiz or the situation with Jonte Porter, those are one-offs, that they had never happened before. A player tried something and the system worked and they were caught. And maybe that's what happened. I think that's probably a very naive way of thinking. I think the more realistic reality is that Luis Ortiz was not the first pitcher to intentionally throw a ball for the purpose of gambling. And we didn't know about it. And we never found out, and we probably never will. And like, do I know that's what's happening? No. But we've had so many scandals already that have come to light that I do think that it's naive to believe that these systems in place to catch these things have caught 100% of them. I just think that's unrealistic.
So I want to ask you about something about what this should all look like. You know, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver has made this case often where he says if he has to choose between legalized gambling, which is what we have now, and illegal gambling, and where it was not legal and regulated before, as it was pre-2018, he'd choose this way, and he hopes that there's more regulation. Is that a false choice? Is that a binary that doesn't adequately represent the options that we have here? Because to me, it seems there could be other ways to approach this whole situation, and it's not just solely about, is this legal or not? Can we track bets or not? You know, he compares catching some of these scandals to kind of like insider trading, where you see enough betting go on to one particular bet, whether that's be on a game, whether that be on a prop bet, that some of these regulators are able to catch on to it. To me, I say, well, that means the betting has already happened. The manipulation might have already happened too. And someone is being caught after the fact when something that you don't want to happen has already occurred.
This is very much the party line from sports gambling companies and leagues now, to some extent, which is, it's good that sports gambling is legal because it brings it out into the light. It allows us to regulate it. It allows us to have systems in place to monitor for malfeasance. And if not for that, this gambling would all be underground and we'd have no visibility into it and we'd never catch anything. That's sort of the party line. And I'm not going to sit here and say that that's crazy. I think to an extent, it's a fair point, right? Clearly, because of legal gambling, we are more equipped to spot malfeasance because there's more record keeping, because there are integrity monitoring firms, because there are sports legal regulated sports books that report bizarre wagering activity. But I also think it's a little bit disingenuous because it implies that what we're seeing here are not, at least to some extent, crimes of opportunity. That all of this gambling that we've seen would all just move into the illegal market if legal gambling did not exist. And I personally do not believe that to be the case. I do not believe that everything we are seeing here and have seen in the last few years in the sports gambling space would all just happen in the illegal market of not for legal gambling. I do believe that this is in part crimes of opportunity. People, because of the accessibility of gambling, because of how ubiquitous it is, because of how easy it is to do, because it's right there on their finger, at their fingertips, they're more likely to participate in it. Additionally, we haven't talked about this much, and I'm not sure we really need to in this conversation, but ubiquitous legal sports gambling has also created a generation of gambling addicts, right?
Well, that is very important, right? So the NCAA, I think, 2 years ago commissioned a study that said, that found rather, that 2/3 of kids on college campuses sports gamble. That's important because the way I look at it is that means if people in high school and in college grow up with sports gambling, that means the generations of athletes coming into pro sports are native gamblers. That kind of changes this entire paradigm of pro sports. That's way different than anything we've seen over the previous 100 years, where it was always a taboo, it was always illegal, and people were always told to stay away from it. Now they grow up gambling, their friends gambling, their parents gambling. And it's something that they bring in, a habit that they might bring in with them into pro sports.
It's absolutely terrifying that we're in this place. And look, you mentioned the NCAA study. The reality is, you know this, anyone who's paid attention knows this, that among young men, specifically young men between the ages of 18 and 35, sports gambling is ubiquitous. It seems like everybody does it. And when I only say 18 to 35, because that's all that's formally tracked, it is starting younger than that. You could go into any high school in America and see 15, 16-year-olds illegally betting on FanDuel and DraftKings. I guarantee to you, I know it's unquestionable. And I've heard from, not long ago, I got an email, in fact, from a high school baseball coach in Pennsylvania who told me his entire team all bets on apps. And the vast majority of them are underage. In most places, it'd be 18 to gamble. These are the people that would be going into professional sports. Some portion of these children are going to get into college sports or professional sports already hooked on gambling. It's just a numbers game. We know that a some percentage of sports gamblers become gambling addicts. And we're getting into a place where some portion of professional athletes are going to be going into their league already as gambling addicts. And then what? Then what's going to happen? And look, you cannot tell me that they would all become gambling addicts if sports gambling was not legal. They would not be betting illegally when they're 17, 18 years old, going to offshore books. They just wouldn't, not in the same numbers. It is because it is legal, because it is accepted, because it's become such a part of the culture that everybody is doing it. And think about if you're a college athlete, right? You're a college athlete, you're on campus. Every person you know is betting on apps. And yeah, you're not supposed to. You're told you're not supposed to. But everybody you know who's not an athlete is already doing it. And you go, well, I'm a college student too, and I'm going to do it too. And all of a sudden, my bet on the NFL becomes a bet on college football. And then, oh, oops, it became college basketball. I'm not usually a fan of slippery slope arguments. I'm really not. But I do believe there is a slippery slope element to this, where it starts as one thing, you get into trouble, and suddenly you move into something else that's a little bit more of a problem.
Well, let me get to the final thing that I was hoping to hit on today. So I began the show by talking about the college basketball gambling scheme that operated across the country last year, right? And, you know, even had tentacles into the NBA with Jonte Porter, Terry Rozier and Malik Beasley, also under federal investigation, perhaps related to this whole thing. And that scheme was centered around getting college basketball players, allegedly to manipulate their performance to help bettors win their first half spread betting lines, right? That was, for the most part, a small operation. The impact was small. The schools that were involved, Eastern Michigan, Mississippi Valley State, even Arizona State, not Blue Bloods, not even big-time programs that most people have heard of. The games, obviously, that might have been involved here, also not something that went on most people's radars, right?
Correct.
There's the question, though, of how large this goes. We talk about the big one, right? And you mentioned that earlier in this podcast. What is the big one? What is, in your thought, like the chance of the big one happening? Have professional athletes been too salary-proofed from being potentially implicated in one of these things because they are just making too much money? They might not be the ones who are susceptible to getting involved in one of these schemes. Or is that not even true, despite all the money that's coming into pro sports on the player side?
What you just said has been the league sort of pipe dream from the beginning of this, that a big scandal, match fixing, the Super Bowl being thrown is not a genuine concern because athletes today make too much money and they have too much to lose. And every league will give you some version of that when you talk to them about this. That has been, again, that is part of the party line. I personally don't believe that to be true because it's not about money. These athletes are not doing it for money. To make a lot of money.
What are they doing it for?
Do you think Luis Ortiz is able to make big money on sort of prop bets, individual pitches? Or no, not meaningfully. They do it they do it for the juice. They do it for the competition. There have been studies, many studies, that have shown that professional athletes are particularly susceptible to gambling addiction because the personality traits, the innate personality traits that gave them the drive to become professional athletes is similar to the personality traits that lead to something like gambling addiction. So essentially, professional athletes are more likely to become gambling addicts than the average person for the reason that makes them an athlete. They crave competition. They believe to their dying breath that they could go overcome any obstacle and defy any odd. They feel that way because they already did it. To become a professional athlete, they defied overwhelming odds to do so and believed from the start of their lives that they could. That's not necessarily the case with sports gambling, but they still believe it to be true, right? So I don't believe that just because an athlete makes a lot of money, that means they're not going to bet. They do it because they crave it, because they crave the action, they crave the juice, they crave the competition, they crave striving for something or feeling like they're in control of something. So I do believe that athletes are going to continue to gamble. They're gambling now, hopefully not in their own sport, but I do believe that we're in danger of the big one. I don't think that it's realistic to believe that it's inconceivable that we talk about a World Series being on the some sort of manipulation, the World Series or the Super Bowl, the college football championship game. It absolutely could happen. And I believe it will happen eventually, not necessarily today, not necessarily tomorrow. But I do believe we continue down this path. It's a real risk, especially with sort of the lax regulation that currently exists. There are things that could be done to make the gambling industry safe, right? There could be a national clearinghouse on all sports bets placed in every sports book in every state so that there's an integrity monitor or other central body could see every single legal bet that's coming in instead of playing whack-a-mole state to state, right? States could say, and leagues could fight for eliminating certain betting markets that are particularly vulnerable, certain prop bets, things that are ripe for spot fixing or negative unders. These are all things that could happen, but it would take leadership, it would take government intervention, and it would take these leagues stepping up and going, yes, sports books, we want your money, we crave your money, we need your money, but our integrity is more important and we need to find a way to balance those two concerns. And I'm not sure that pendulum is tilted the right way as we stand here today.
Well, it's going to be fascinating where all this goes in the future. As you said, none of those things have been implemented. Sports have taken some steps. You know, the NBA pushed the sports books to get rid of prop betting on two-way players. The NCAA is trying to get rid of prop bets altogether. But that still leaves the majority of the bets still out there. And it remains an issue in so many ways for the players, the teams, and the leagues. And it's something that they're going to have to reckon with in the future going forward. And as you said, and as we discussed earlier, we have a whole generation of sports bettors coming into pro sports. And I'm kind of curious to see where all that goes in the next few years. And I just want to leave it here with one quote from Tyrese Halliburton. To half the world, I'm just helping them make money on DraftKings or whatever, he said. I'm a prop. Thanks to Jared Diamond, reporter for the Wall Street Journal, for coming on this episode of Business Decision, not presented to you by FanDuel or DraftKings. I'm Mike Vorkunov.
Boy.
I appreciate you listening. I appreciate you guys hopefully subscribing. Maybe leave like a like or a nice comment, but not really. Just subscribe. Subscribe to the podcast. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. If you thought we did a good job, let us know. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of Business Decision.